If you would be turning in your Bibles to John chapter 9, I was ambitious when I gave Paul the passage with respect to thinking, silly me, that we were going to get through the whole chapter, and there's no way that's going to happen. But we're going to go as far as we can this morning. In terms of reading, I'm going to begin reading in verse 1 of chapter 9 and read through the end of verse 7, and then we'll pick up some verses later in the chapter. So hear God's inerrant and infallible word. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world." Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. And then over in beginning in verse 24, there's been some back and forth, people not believing what they've seen, wondering how this has happened, and the Pharisees get involved. And beginning in verse 24, "So for the second time they called the man who had been blind and said to him, 'Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner,'" referring to Jesus. "He answered, 'Whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see.' They said to him, 'What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?' He answered them, 'I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?' And they reviled him, saying, 'You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from.' The man answered, 'Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing.' They answered him, 'You were born in utter sin, and would you teach us?' And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, 'Do you believe in the Son of Man?' He answered, 'And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?' Jesus said to him, 'You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you.' He said, 'Lord, I believe.' And he worshiped him." Thus the end of God's inerrant and infallible word. Well, that day he made his way to the outer gates of the temple. It was like every day of his life where he fumbled along, probably with some sort of stick to make sure he didn't trip over anything. He was an adult. He was long past the time when his parents would have walked him over to that area, probably to beg for alms. As worshipers were going up to the temple, they would pass him by. We're not told that he was begging, but why would a blind man who couldn't work and feed him, couldn't support himself, be out, but perhaps to do that? And little did he know this was the last day that would happen. But as he goes out, he probably had been led along by a friend. I had a blind roommate for a year and a half in college, and he would go around campus with his, you know, stick, tapping and tapping. But when he and I would walk places, he would just sort of hold on to my elbow, and he could follow along as I led him places. So someone probably had led this man, but they couldn't lead him into the temple itself, into the temple area, because the blind and the maimed and those who were ceremonially unclean couldn't go in. They were excluded. So he had heard about the temple. He had heard about the different courts and the washings and the animals and all of that, but he had never seen it. or even been around it. Maybe he had heard the stories as people were coming and going about what had happened. Perhaps some had been generous to him over the years. No doubt in the way that children can be, he had grown up hearing that he was unclean. He had probably heard some cruel taunts along the way, but now he's an adult and that had mostly passed. But people still talked about him. They talked about him as if he was not just blind, but as if he was also deaf. But he could hear. And he could hear the things that they said about him and wondering, like the disciples did in this question in verse 2, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents? I mean, it had to be one or the other. It's like the old question, are you still cheating on your taxes? I mean, it assumes a lot that you were cheating, and now the question is, are you still doing it? And in this way, the only possible answers that the disciples had was, well, it either had to be this man or his parents. And I suspect the disciples and Jesus, having been in Jerusalem for a little while, going back to what's happening in chapter 7 and 8, had been talking to people, and perhaps they had passed this man multiple days, and maybe even some real seekers of Jesus, some people who genuinely wanted to know the truth, had come to the disciples, and they're trying to figure out what to make of bad things that happen in the world and bad things that happen to people, and they had said, help us understand. I mean, we hear what Jesus is saying, but here's this blind guy. Now, was it his sin or was his parents' sin? And they're trying to make sense of the world and what is God doing in his providence in the things that happen in our lives. And so the disciples, perhaps having a chance, as they're walking out of the temple area. If you go back, in fact, in chapter 8, Jesus has enraged the religious leaders. And so at the end of verse of chapter 8, Jesus said to them, before Abraham was, I am. And that was like taking a big can of gasoline and walking over to the campfire. That was the reaction they had. And so in verse 59, they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. So Jesus has moved away in the hubbub and the chaos of the crowd. His time has not yet come, and so he moves out of the temple in the chaos of the crowd. And maybe now the disciples realize we finally got a chance. They've played stump the band with us, asking us, well, who sinned? And so now they can ask Jesus. They can go to the source and get the answer. And you almost imagine that their minds had been reminded of the question as they're walking out of the holy area out into the common area where the lame and the deaf and the blind would have been laying and seeking alms. And they ask, oh, you know, we see that guy. That's right. We were going to ask Jesus, was it this man or his parents who sinned that he was born blind? And though the text doesn't tell us, I almost imagine Jesus putting his hand on the man's shoulder and saying, it was not that this man sinned. It was that the works of God might be displayed in him. God had been doing something in this man who had been excluded from the things of God, had perhaps overheard words of truth as the law and the prophets were read, but he couldn't come near. He was just like a leper as a blind man. He was unclean. And they're asking about that man, and Jesus said, it's not that this man. You know, when we talk about this man, it implies physical proximity. And you didn't go near people like that, because you could catch what they had. And so Jesus, speaking of this man, not that man over there, it was that this man, he didn't sin, nor his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. This man who has been utterly distanced from the things of God is now being told that he's an instrument of God's glory in the world. And now it's not just the beautiful people and not just the smart people and the rich people and the powerful people. We would say, oh, of course, that they're the means by which God shows his glory in the world. But this fellow who didn't even know what his own face looked like, Jesus is saying for all the world to hear that God has chosen to display his works in this guy. And that was the beginning of the change in his life. And everything from that moment forward was completely divorced from everything that had been true in his life up until then. And then Jesus is explaining about his ministry and why it is good and right that while he's here, while the light is present, that the light shines forth, and that there will be a time when the light won't be present, but the light is here now. Wonder if the man even could make out light. Sometimes people who are blind can make out light and darkness, but that's it. And he hears that the light of the world is here. And so we're told in verse 6, he spits on the ground, and he makes mud with the saliva. And you wonder, what is that all about? I mean, couldn't Jesus just say, see, in the way that he commanded Lazarus, Lazarus, come forth. He'll do that in chapter 11. Lazarus, come forth from the tomb. One preacher has said he had to say, Lazarus, come forth, because if he just said, come forth, the whole graveyard would have come forward. Such is the power of Jesus. And so this one who spoke and the world came into being is using mud. So some have speculated that, well, this is the breaking in of the new heavens and the new earth. And so in the same way that God made the world by fashioning Adam out of the dust of the ground, now he's refashioning Adam in redemption, in laying this mud on his eyes. I think probably what the most straightforward understanding of what Jesus is doing here is he's doing the same kinds of things he does with us. He takes the most seemingly foolish means possible, and he says, now trust me. And so he is putting mud on this man's eyes, which kind of seems like it's defeating the point. I mean, if the point is for him to be able to see, give the man a washcloth, clean your eyes. Don't put more mud on top of it. That's just going to aggravate the problem. But Jesus has his means, and his means look foolish to the world. The means of gathering here Lord's Day by Lord's Day, and that we would read the Bible, and we would pray the Bible, and that we would sing the Bible, and that someone would preach the Bible, and we would see the Bible in these elements of the Lord's Supper and of baptism, that is the most foolish thing in the world. And yet that's the means God has established. The Apostle Paul talks about the foolishness of preaching. And it is a foolish thing that we would come here, but that's the means God has promised to bless. And maybe you sit down in the morning or the evening and you feel just, you're worn out, you're tired, the days are short, maybe you're getting into sort of a malaise with lack of sunshine, and God says, I will meet you on the pages of this Bible that you hold in your hand. And it seems like the most foolish thing in the world. And he says, trust me. And so he tells the blind man, I'm putting this mud on your eyes. Now, go wash in the pool of Siloam. This is a pool that was probably 60 to maybe at most 100 yards away from where this scene would have happened. But it was sort of rough terrain. Some of you do mountain biking. Some of you do hiking. And you know what it is to have a rough surface that you have to traverse. And that would have been triply hard for a blind man. And Jesus sends him. And so the man goes to do something pretty foolish. That is for a blind man to be heading down this trail. Pools are at the bottom of hills. You know, water flows downhill. So he's got to go down to this place. And what we have excavated in the Temple of Siloam, we think it had steps all around it. And so the man could have waded in to the point where he could then begin to wash that mud off. And what did God do? God opened his eyes. Through the most counterintuitive, backwards way we could possibly imagine, you see, that ensures that Christ gets the glory. It wasn't through these natural means. Now, God surely gets great glory when he uses physicians and he uses modern plumbing and chemistry and pharmaceuticals and all kinds of ways that we are healed. But Jesus is breaking in here into space and time. And now this man who had been so far from the things of God, who had never been able to see his own image, who isn't supported very well by his parents, when they're brought before the Jews in some of the verses we didn't have time to read, they are asked, well, you know, what's going on? And they're like, he's of age, ask him. I mean, that's like, you know, someone coming and to rob your house and dad saying, take the women, take the children, just leave me alone. I mean, they're out for themselves. And so the man's eyes, he goes back, and he went and washed and came back seeing. That was not on anyone's bingo card that morning of what they expected to happen, least of all the disciples. And so there you get into this series of back and forth. There are about four different scenes that happen through verse 34. As we see the Jesus who heals in the most unlikely ways now is helping this man, the Spirit of God, I think, is helping this man begin to tease out and to understand who he is and who Jesus is and who the world is. And now the man who was blind just moments ago now sees more clearly than anyone there. And those who have been able to physically see, you almost feel as you read these verses this blindness descending over them. And because of the hardness of their hearts, even though they have seen this miracle, Jesus has been preaching in the temple, as I said, as we read in chapter 8, and yet the more he talks, the less they understand. And they're understanding less and less because they don't want to understand. In the same way that a thief doesn't want to find a policeman. It isn't that he can't find a policeman. He wants to avoid the policeman. In the same way, they want to avoid who Jesus is and what Jesus is saying. So this back and forth exchange. And we see the religious leaders who are supposed to know what's going on. They're supposed to understand what the Bible says and what can be done on the Sabbath and what mercy looks like. They get harder and harder in their rebellion. And the man is unpacking the implications of what Jesus has done. Isn't that such a metaphor for the Christian life? Jesus heals us. He comes to us when we have nothing. Nothing in my hand I bring. Simply to the cross I cling. He comes to us. He seeks us out. He draws us to himself. He opens our eyes and we begin to see ourselves as we really are. We see him as he is. And then that begins to have implications for how we understand the world and how we think about the people around us. And so our work begins to look different, and our family life begins to look different. And the way we interact with our friends, and the way we think about the people in the community around us, those who have lesser and those who have more, and all of that gets turned upside down because the kingdom is this different place. It's the place where the king rules. We've wanted to rule our own lives, and now the king has come. And so there's this teasing out through these verses I'd encourage you to look at this afternoon is that people are asking, well, how has this happened? And who is this man? And what has happened here? And how did it happen on the Sabbath? Because if Jesus were a righteous man, he wouldn't have done it that way, is the argument of the Pharisees. And you see, as they're descending into the hardness and the hard-heartedness, as they're putting their titanium shields up. They're like, you know, the kryptonite is there or whatnot. But the man is coming to understand more and more. He's understanding who Jesus is, and he's understanding who they are. When he says, oh, do you want me to repeat this because you want to become disciples too? That was a pretty plucky thing for a guy who had never even been into the temple to say to these religious leaders. And so this exchange back and forth. And they finally, in verse 34, you were born in utter sin. And would you teach us? And they cast him out. He's seemingly back where he started because he was cast out and there was no way he could come into the place where the clean things were because he was unclean. And so they've seemingly, in the eyes of the world, sent him back to where he came from. But he's the richest man there now because his eyes have been opened, not just the eyes of his body. That's really a picture of what Christ has done in his soul. The man understands increasingly through this, you see a progression through chapter 9. He understands more and more, he sees more clearly how blind he really is. And he sees the ways in which he has misunderstood who God is, who Christ is, and we see the ways that those who can see are getting more and more blind. They are passing in the night, if you will. And one is descending deeper and deeper into blindness as the other one is seeing the world as it really is. Friends, when Christ draws you to himself, he opens your eyes, and then you begin to see what maybe had been a perfectly put together little world you had constructed. Like the pieces of the Jenga pile, he begins to pull away things, and you see the madness for what it is. And we begin to see the pile or the mountain of sand upon which we have built our whole castle. And Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, the fool is the one who builds on that foundation, and the waves come, and such is his destruction. Versus the one who builds on the rock. Again, this is the least likely person in Jerusalem to have been the means for displaying the glory of God. And I don't know the circumstances that most of you in this room are in right now. No doubt some are in seasons where, as we read in Psalm 16, the lines have fallen in pleasant places. And you're in a season of calm and peace, and maybe you've had hard times, but things are not like they used to be, and you're grateful for that. And some of you may be passing through the storm right now. And, you know, all the world can do is offer you the advice of Winston Churchill, who said, when you're going through hell, don't stop. Keep going. Charles Spurgeon in the 19th century said, I will not curse the waves that crash me upon the rock of ages. And there are circumstances in which we wonder, Lord, have I sinned? Is this my sin? Is this is this because of something I've done, or is it because someone else has sinned against you and that has implications for me? And there certainly are circumstances in life where we can draw those kinds of lines. But often we can't. And we wonder, Lord, what are you doing? And Jesus tells us that we are the means that the works of God might be displayed. It's sort of tired and corny, but it really is true that you take a flower, you know, and you press it or you muddle it, and that's how the fragrance is released. You boil off silver, you boil off the dross so you can have the pure silver or the pure gold. And God's love for sinners is such that he will not leave us blind, lying in the mud. But he applies that mud. And as he applies that mud, it becomes the means of his healing and the means of our salvation and the means of our being the most unlikely trophies of grace and mercy as we show forth the works of God. And we don't become instantly perfect. This man, his eyes are open in an instant, but it takes a while through chapter 9 for him to come to a full understanding of who Jesus is. And it takes a lifetime of that for us. It's gradually we come to see the Lord of glory in his all of his glory. And one day, we will behold him as he is. Right now, we see through a glass dimly. And some of you, I suspect, feel like I'm barely seeing any light, and the glass is dimmer than it's ever been. Friends, all I can tell you is the greater the darkness, the greater the light, as God brings healing and as he meets us in those places. And we know from Psalm 23 that he doesn't promise to take us out of the valley of the shadow of death. He goes with us through the valley of the shadow of death. As we wrap up, verse 35, Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And that's not surprising in light of the exchange that took place in those previous 25 or so verses. But Jesus is not a one and done. Jesus is a pursuer of sinners. George Matheson in the 19th century, who a minister who had gone blind, and his fiance left him, and his sister cared for him, and one day she got married, and the night before that marriage ceremony, he was despondent over what was to happen, and he wrote the wonderful words of the hymn, "O love that will not let me go." And so too, the man could have sung that. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, having found someone implies that you were searching for someone. And Jesus, having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man? And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you. Lord, I believe," and he worshiped him. Perhaps you're in a season of maybe not even hardship, just a season of indifference. Maybe you sit down to read your Bible and you're getting about as much of it as you're dogwood looking at these little black squiggly things on a white page. And God seems to be silent. But Jesus comes and he finds not just the lost, but the wandering. The sheep that seemingly is headed for the cliff, he gently draws back. And he will draw you back. And perhaps the right course is to let him put mud on your eyes, to do the foolish thing, to say, I about a week away from never going to worship again, but I'm going to go this week. And I don't feel it, but kind of the way the man didn't really feel it, walking down to the pool. But Jesus searches, and he finds. And he will keep you in himself. Such is this Jesus, the one who heals and seeks, the one who helps us make sense of the world. And that is the Jesus who summons you this morning to the table to meet with him. The Jesus who draws the sinners, who draws messed up people with messed up lives and messes that maybe you made this week, or messes that go back decades, or messes that your parents made or your grandparents made or some employer at some point in your life made. And Lord, which one of those sins, which one of those people sinned who made this mess? And how did I sin? And the words of Jesus are still true. It was that the works of God might be displayed in you.